better than the iodide form because it is not as likely to cause upset stomachs in children, the elderly, the sick, and pets. Order the official potassium iodate for only $24 and...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who, of course, has worked within the Reagan Department of Education, has taught at the university level, has testified before Congress, has done research work for many corporations, is actually one of the finest researchers we have. And today we're going to be talking about his latest article, which you find at newswithviews.com. That's at newswithviews.com, and of course it's entitled The Racism and Anti-Liberalism of Abortion. And really it's sort of a unique idea to stop and think that abortion is really a racist concept, but it really is. But I'm going to let, of course, Dr. Cuddy picked up the story and developed that story for you. But if you stop and realize that Planned Parenthood is a racist organization, why, of course, it'll help you much better to understand the true extent of the evil that that is aligned against freedom. Go right ahead, Dennis.
Okay. Well, as usual, at the beginning of my articles, I have a note about a contemporary subject of the day. The articles I write often are about things of interest today, but they also have some sort of research and historical background. And so, to keep abreast of current events, I usually have something that's strictly current, a hot subject in the news, and that in particular is about the movement towards socialism, is what my note is, which I'll get into in just a minute. But even before then, an even hotter subject today, which I'll just add a word or two about, is the current situation over in Iran. And the reason I'm doing that is so that your listeners will get some perspective and know what's going on. It's that old concept of if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat the mistakes of the past. And so when you see an election like in 1992, George Bush versus Bill Clinton, and they throw in Ross Perot, if you're aware of history, you know that's pretty much a repeat of the 1912 election where you had Taft, Roosevelt, and Wilson. It's the same scenario, but because the public doesn't know what's gone on before, it's oblivious to what's going on in 1992. And so what's happening, again, the public looks at Iran and says, oh my goodness, look at this controversy. Oh, look at those young people, the democratic forces. Oh, look at the mullahs over there, the religious fanatics. Oh, look at Ahmadinejad, the puppet of the master mullahs and central casting and so forth. You know. And they look at that and they say, well, you know, that's what's going on today. And my, isn't this this terribly important and so forth? Well, after the break, I'll get into why this is the same thing all over again that they've done in other countries, including the U.S. And after the break, I guess we'll pick up on that.
Well, I think what's really important is for people to understand how they focus our attention on the wrong issues. Oh, my goodness, we're so concerned about democracy in Iran, but nobody ever talks about the fact today, at least, that in 1953 we toppled the democratically elected premier there, a man named Mossadegh, and we put in the Shah. And then in 1979, the Shah was really rather liberal. We toppled the Shah and we brought in the radical mullahs. And, of course, they simply picked up all the various military forces that we'd trained so that they could maintain their power, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And Dr. Cuddy is certainly one of our favorite guests, usually with us on Friday afternoon. And we're going to be talking about his latest article at newsreviews.com entitled The Racism and Anti-Liberalism of Abortion. But Dr. Cuddy had started out talking about what's going on over in Iran, and I think it's so important that we understand that most of what you're being told by the controlled media simply is to confuse you about what's really going on in Iran. And of course, as someone once said, you know, if you don't read the newspapers and you don't watch television, why, you are uninformed. But if you do read the newspapers and you do watch television, you're disinformed. Because they have an organized plan of confusing you and focusing your attention on the wrong issues. So let's get to what's really going on in Iran today from your point of view, Dr. Cuddy.
Okay. Your listeners need to do is unpeel the layers to find out what's really going on. There's sort of this surface layer of what you think is going on and what the media tells you is going on. And then there's something behind that, and then behind even that is the power elite. So on the one hand, you have, since you mentioned Mossadegh, you have Mossadegh being replaced by the Shah. But what you have to understand is that the Shah only comes in with the approval and cooperation of Ayatollah Kashani at that time. Now, he has a student, a young person named Ayatollah Khomeini. And so years later, in the late 70s, under the Carter administration, it's now his turn to be put into power. And the Shah knows this. And in fact, in one of my earlier articles, I had mentioned that Farah Pahlavi, the Shah's name is actually Pahlavi, and his wife, he had three wives. This particular wife is named Farah, F-A-R-A-H, Pahlavi. And I put in one of my previous News with Views columns how the ambassador that was sent there at the time from the U.S., his name was Sullivan, and Imelda Marcos said, I'm giving you, Farah Pahlavi, a message from my husband, that's Ferdinand Marcos, in the Philippines, for you, Farah Pahlavi, to give to your husband, the Shah. And it is, watch out, because everywhere Sullivan goes, there's a revolution comes about. And so, you know, here we are, deja vu all over again. So the Shah knows what's going on. But the key here that I want to mention is Farah Pahlavi, the wife. And there was some, you know, debate about, well, can we maybe have the young prince whose name is Reza?
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, what Dr. Cuddy is suggesting is that most of what you think you're being told today by the media about Iran just isn't true. And he was simply pointing out that Mrs. Marcos, the wife of Ferdinand Marcos, the former president of the Philippines, had sent a message to one of the Shah's wives and had basically told her that a man named Mr. Sullivan was being transferred by the American State Department to Iran, and wherever he went there was a revolution. That had a revolution there. Everywhere he went in the world there was revolutions. Obviously the United States was planning on creating another revolution in Iran. We'd created one. The CIA had financed the revolution back in 1953. We never talk about that. I thought we believed in democracy. No, that is simply what we use to confuse the people. What we want to do is put our man in power, and then let the people imagine they're going to be able to vote and have representative government. But it's all a facade. It's not like what goes on in Chicago year after year, or maybe what goes on in Ohio year after year, or what goes on in many precincts right here in California, election after election. But people believe that, of course, it's important how they vote, but it's really not important how people vote. It's important who counts the votes. That's the way the game is really played, and the CIA rigs elections throughout the world. We're going to be rigging elections in Iran. I'm sure they played a part in the recent one, but we're talking about now 1979. The Shah is in power, and Mr. Sullivan has gone to Iran, and of course he is from the globalists who run the American State Department. The State Department has been under the control of the Council on Foreign Relations from at least 1945 up until 1976. After that, the Trilateral Commission and the CFR were in control of the State Department, and Zbigniew Brzezinski, who organized the Trilateral Commission, is the National Security Council. The year is 1979. And Zbigniew Brzezinski wants, of course, to get the Shah out and bring in the radical mullahs. Of course, he also starts the Afghan War so that we can create al-Qaeda and the World Terrorist Movement. And of course, he supervises bringing Saddam Hussein to power in 1979. But you go right ahead with the story of Iran.
Yeah, actually, just a real quickie note, in terms of the State Department, 1945, it was a little bit before then that people get, from you, Radio Liberty, my book, The Road to Socialism and the New World Order. I put in a specific quote from earlier than that, where this individual is expressing his concern at the highest levels of the government in the State Department, that he's making a note to his boss. I think his name Pettigrew is, I forget the exact name, but it's, the quote's in there, the date's in there, who he wrote the letter to, saying it's around 1942-ish. And he's saying, you know, I'm getting concerned. He's writing to his boss in the State Department. I'm getting concerned that these Council on Foreign Relations guys have taken over this place. So it's a little bit before 45 that they're actually starting their big move there. So, but anyway, back to what's going on with the Shah and his wife, Farah Pahlavi, and so on. As I said, on the surface level, you're looking at what you're told by the media is going on, this big democratic movement, so on and so on. Behind that is this sort of religious element that you're saying, like the mullahs are in control. And back in 53, they come in, but the Shah's replaced. I mean, he's put back into power. He had been previously in the 40s, and most of that comes in. Then the Shah comes back, but with the approval of Ayatollah Kashani. And so then his student, his pupil in 79, Ayatollah Khomeini, is brought back from France, and, you know, we're aghast at what he does, even though he had been saying previously in the 60s, you know, death to Americans and so forth. But Brzezinski is sort of like Casablanca, where Brzezinski, I am shocked at what's going on. But all of that's planned, and that's what I said, that behind even that layer is what's going on in terms of the power elite, its agents. Brzezinski at this time manipulates it. Same thing back in 1953. Alan Dulles with his secret $10 million slush fund out of Switzerland is creating the revolution through General Norman Schwarzkopf's father, who was a colonel in the New Jersey State Police, who retired, and then he gets him to put up the money to train these, quote, spontaneous revolutionaries to overthrow Mossadegh. Sort of like the spontaneous revolutions of the late 1840s, you know. All of these revolutions just happened to pop up after Karl Marx's manifesto in 48.
And it's like the spontaneous revolutions over in Iran today. Ladies and gentlemen, how do you get 100,000 people out on the streets? How do you get them out there? Somebody's organizing it. How do you get these spontaneous organizations, whenever they're holding a meeting of the World Trade Organization, the central bankers, all these spontaneous demonstrations where people are flown in from all over the world, and they all, of course, are put up. It costs money for the airfare, costs money for the for the hotel accommodations. Somebody's putting up big money to finance all of these demonstrations. Understand, nothing is it appears to be, but go right ahead.
Yeah, it sort of reminds you of those poor impoverished hippies in the late 60s, doesn't it? They showed up everywhere. They didn't have any money. but they show up in Chicago and Philadelphia and San Francisco. They get all, they get around
and
with no money.
They're being financed by Exxon.
Right. So anyway, back to the point. That's what I meant by you peel one layer off, and then you have to peel another layer off, and you have the CIA, you know, doing its things and so forth and so on. In 53, and then they do their thing in the late 70s, and Brzezinski, like you said, the Afghan plan, which he denies until 20 years later, and then he says, oh, yeah, that's what I had in mind all along. And so anyway, in terms of today, what's going on, what you have is this one layer that looks like what the media tells you on the surface. Behind that, you have another layer with the people sort of behind the scenes somewhat, the Ayatollahs and the Mullahs really controlling. And at that level, the only thing I want to point out is, remember, this opposition democratic movement leader rousing the people and so forth, you got to remember one thing. Anybody who ran in that election had to have the approval of these Mullahs from the get-go. There were many people who they did not even approve of. They couldn't run. So this big democratic leader opponent of Ahmadinejad had the approval of the mullahs. Don't forget that. Very important point. Even though he's, you know, waving the flag and, democracy, recounting. This guy was enough okie dokie with the mullahs to be allowed to run, because a lot of people weren't, but he was. You know, they said, yeah, he can run. Okay, so now what I'm saying is, behind even that is something else going on. This is the third layer that you have to peel back. And so what this layer has to do with, the real layer, is where the power elite operates. And I've told you listeners this many times. You have to look at several layers back to find out what's really going on. If something doesn't seem to make sense, I encourage your listeners to think, well, now how would this make sense in getting the power elite's ultimate goal of a world socialist government? And so in this case, what this is the same old, sort of like the 1992 election was a replay of 1912. This is the same old Edward Bernays scenario. You remember Edward Bernays, 1928, he comes in, he's William Paley's right-hand man, setting up CBS, and he writes this book, Propagandist, published in the same year, 1928, and he says, we're an invisible government. We can manipulate the organized habits of the people and so forth, right? So what happens is, that is the quote, and I put this in my Secret Records Revealed, that most people remember. However, in my Secret Records Revealed, I put another quote by Bernays, and it's later on, toward the end of that book, Propaganda, where he says, there will come along a leading politician, businessman type person, and he will say, I must lead the people, am I not their servant? See, it sounds like a contradiction, right? I must lead the people, am I not their servant? What did Ross Perot say? Right? Essentially that. I must lead. I must be the president. I am a servant of the people. I will take a survey of their demands. I will represent them. Okay, now fast forward from Ross Perot to now. Here's what may be happening. Now, you know, I don't know for sure, but I'm just surmising if this is the same sort of scenario, the Edward Bernays, you know, Ross Perot, the repeat of this strategy that they use. It may well be that this situation is created by Edward Bernays, the power elite type people in Iran, for a specific purpose. And that is, you allow this fellow to run to challenge Ahmadinejad. Okay? Big controversy. You know, the election is stolen. This is outrageous. Riot in the streets. Deaths. Protests. Massive spontaneous demonstrations. My. What can we possibly do? Well, guess what? In the late 70s, the young Prince Pahlavi, whose name's Reza, R-E-Z-A, was too young at that time, right? But he came over here. I'm sure he's just been, you know, out playing golf while he's here. No, he's been trained. He was trained in the U.S. He can fly, you know, fighter jets and all this sort of stuff. He's been well prepared. And he has been recently dropping little hints that, my goodness, you know, if the people want me back there, there's the mullahs on the one hand, there's the people on the other hand, there's Ahmadinejad on the other hand. Who can come back and solve this crisis? And so he might just come out and say, I would be willing to lead the... I will respond to their request. However, I will not be an autocrat like my father, the Shah. No, no. I will be a man of the people. I must lead the people. Am I not their servant? You know, this is a possibility. If this holds true to previous patterns, this whole scenario over there, it looks like a setup for a solution just like that. Watch and see if that happens. I don't know what's going to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, obviously they're up to something. These spontaneous demonstrations we're seeing in over in Iran. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, you don't get 100,000 or 200,000 people out there, unless somebody is putting them up to it, unless somebody is urging them on, unless somebody is financing their leaders. We'll be back here in just a moment or two with Dr. Dennis Cuddy as we analyze, of course, perhaps we'll get back to this whole idea of the racist policies of abortion. Well, Dennis, you pick up the story from there.
Okay. Well, just the final comment. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if your listeners pay attention, don't be surprised if it does, because this is a big controversy, big blow up. How do we solve the problem? You know, how do we satisfy the mullahs, the democratic forces, the military, the leaders of it? You know, all of this could be solved by Reza Pahlavi coming back, not as some sort of monarch, but as simply a leader of the people. Serving them, not telling them what to do, a servant. He would keep the mullahs in place. The military could support him because they supported his father. The democratic forces would love him. Oh, yes, a man of the people, all that sort of stuff. So that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but don't be surprised if it does, because it smells like what they've done in the past. Okay, now to the note that I have at the beginning of the racism and anti-liberalism of abortion, what I've been saying all along is that the power elite really wants this world socialist government. So the way I begin this note is, there are those today who say we seem to be descending into a type of Marxist socialism. Now, of course, when you say something like that, the media and other people ridicule you as some kind of conspiracy alarmist. Oh, that's ridiculous. Barack Obama isn't some sort of Marxist, and so forth and so on. However, what I note here is if anyone should know about Marxist socialism, it's Pravda, which is supposed to stand for truth. And it doesn't have a really good reputation over the decades for that. However, if you listen to what they say, it's a Stanislav Mishin. He had an article in Pravda April 27th, a couple of months ago, and the article was titled "American Capitalism Gone with a Whimper." Now that's important, that whimper, because T.S. Eliot would say, this is the world, this is the way the world ends, this is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but a whimper. And so he's picking up on that. Most Americans today probably don't even remember that. But anyway, that's probably what he's picking up on, this whimper stuff. And so the way he puts it, now this is Pravda, this is a columnist for Pravda. He says, and they should know about socialism and Marxism. He says, quote, "The American descent into Marxism is happening with breathtaking speed against the backdrop of a passive, hapless sheeple," and which is a term for people, the sheeple, like sheep being led, bad, bad. "True," he says, "the situation has been well prepared on and off for the past century, 100 years. Again, they ought to know, 1917 revolution. Mishin then explains that the testing ground for what's occurring now, here, occurred in Russia back then, he says, by way of Wall Street money, quote, poured into the fists of the Marxists. And that's right. I mean, that's what happened. William Boyce Thompson, Federal Reserve types, all those guys, poured money, right from the get-go, Wall Street into the Marxist revolution. So, quote, poured into the fists of Marxists. He continues, Mishin continues, "Those lessons were taken and used properly to prepare the American populace for the surrender of their freedoms and souls." That's important. See, it's not just material freedoms or your souls, too, he's pointing out. So he says they're going to surrender these freedoms and our souls to the whims of their elites and betters. First, the population was dumbed down, that's right, through a politicized and substandard education system. Then, he's talking about us now, then their faith in God was destroyed. The final collapse has come with the election of Barack Obama. his spending and money printing has been record-setting.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. This is Dr. Stan. Dr. Ketty is simply talking at this point about this article in Pravda, and you'll find this quoted in his latest article at News with Views. I suggest you read it. And basically, this gentleman from Pravda, which is a communist organization, communist publication, is talking about the destruction of America. And America is simply giving up its freedom with a whimper, simply, and talks about how, of course, our educational system has been progressively destroyed, the faith of our people has been destroyed, and now with the election of Barack Obama and his massive spending program and undermining the fabric of our society, this is Provident saying, isn't it such a shame that America, that once great free nation, is being destroyed? And they destroyed the education, they destroyed the churches there, they destroyed the moral fabric of our society, and you pick up there, Dr. Cuddy.
Right. And so Mishan says that the final collapse has come with the election of Barack Obama. His spending and money printing has been record-setting. And then Mishan in Pravda writes, if this keeps up for more than another year, America at best will resemble the Weimar Republic, that's Germany in the 20s, and at worst, Zimbabwe. Congress has put up little more than a whimper to their masters. In the land of, quote, pure, quote, free markets, the American president now has the power, the self-given power, to fire CEOs, like that of General Motors. Mishan goes on, the American president and another group of unelected chosen stooges will now redesign the entire automotive industry and will even be the guarantor of automobile policies. And then he mentions their leader, Prime Minister Putin, less than 2 months ago warned Obama and the United Kingdom's Tony Blair, not to follow the path to Marxism. It leads only to disaster. Apparently, even though we, he's talking about the Russians, even though we suffered 70 years of this Western-sponsored horror show, remember that, Western-sponsored horror show.
Well, I think it's so important for our listeners to know that the whole Marxist movement in Russia was financed from the United States.
Right.
They would have collapsed if we hadn't transferred massive amounts of money to keep the communists in power and technology to keep them in power and finance them, you know, during the Second World War and in fact, even rebuilt up this whole their whole oil industry that's keeping the thing going together with American tax money and American corporate money and American banking money that the American people can't understand. We've created the finest enemy money could buy. But go right ahead there, because the average individual, Dennis, doesn't understand how we have kept the communists in power in Russia, how we're building up the communist regime there in communist China today, why we've taken down our trade barriers so that they can export their goods to us without a tariff, while they have tariffs to keep our goods out, we don't have any tariffs to keep their goods out, and of course, all those magnificent cities over in China, bought with American taxpayers' money, World Bank money which we provide, IMF money which we provide, Asian Development Bank money which we provide, banking money from our major banks, which of course are working hand in glove with this movement to destroy America. But go right ahead.
Right. And for the past, ever since I was a little fellow back in the 40s, the way this whole thing was presented was, well, there's those Soviets, you know, and they're very powerful, and you know, they're ruthless, and here we are in the Cold War, and we're struggling, and we have our satellite countries, and all these battles between those we support, and all this sort of stuff. But if you actually go back to the time of the revolution, the communist revolution, for a brief period, they were actually very open about what was going on. You remember the Raymond Robbins bit and how Lockhart would say, golly, you know, here I am and Raymond is telling Lenin what to do and who to fire and so on. And then there's this little clipping I have from the New York Times, just a little teeny thing, and it's like 1920, something like that. And in there, it's very brief, it says, Comrade Commissar Lenin, whatever they were calling him at the time, has ever just had a frank discussion that I guess we're going to have to rely more and more on those U.S. bankers for our survival. You know, it's like we're not doing too well here, and so we're going to do pretty much what they tell us to do, because if we don't get some money from those Wall Street guys, we ain't going to be around much longer. I mean, Lyndon is talking like that, and it's actually being reported like that. And so what you have is the door opens up. In the 20s, you got Arm & Hammer, you know, getting his little autograph there, you know, Comrade Hammer from Lennon and so on. And they get these huge contracts. So, I mean, these people, the Wall Street guys, they love these dictators because all you have to do is deal with one person, right? You don't have to negotiate with Congresses and all that stuff. So they love these guys like Lennon and Stalin.
And, of course, Henry Ford is building his major plant over there in Gorky, and America's putting Russia on wheels. And then all during the Vietnam, we're financing Russia that's financing the North Vietnamese that are killing our boys in South Vietnam. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead, Dr. Cuddy.
Okay, one last thing. It wasn't just Lenin, but Stalin and Khrushchev that Hammer, you know, was beloved by these people. They put out the red carpet, literally, the red carpet for Armand Hammer when he come over there as, you know, head of Occidental Petroleum.
I mean, that was the Armand Hammer, of course, who was honored repeatedly in the White House by Ronald Reagan. Let me go right ahead.
Sure, and Al Gore's daddy was vice president of Occidental Petroleum, so. You know, this nice, cozy relationship here. So anyway, the point is they love these people. And so early on, there was some information available how, yeah, that's right, it's the Wall Street people who are actually funding the Soviets. But like I said, ever since, say, the late 40s, when the Cold War started, they don't talk about that too much anymore. But originally, they sort of admitted it. So anyway, back to this Mishen article, that's what he's saying. He's basically his words are, we've had, in essence, in Russia, we had 70 years of this Western-sponsored horror show, this Marxism. And he says, according to the Americans, the Russians, we suffered 70 years of this, and we know nothing as foolish, drunken Russians. So let our, quote, wise, quote, Anglo-Saxon, he's talking about us now, these wise Anglo-Saxon fools, find out the folly of their pride. Again, the American public has taken this with barely a whimper, end quote. And then, after that, this article, Mishen refers to Senator Barney Frank, quote, and his Marxist enlightenment, end quote. Now, remember, these guys know who a Marxist is, right? Senator Barney Frank and his Marxist enlightenment. And then Mishen concludes his article by saying, quote, the proud American will go down into his slavery without a fight, beating his chest and proclaiming to the world how free he really is, and the world will only snicker, end quote. And that pretty well sums it up.
And I think this is just exactly what's going on, and we certainly hope that every one of our listeners will want to get a copy of this most recent article in News with Views, where simply Pravda explains exactly what's going on here, and how the American people honestly think they're free as more and more of our freedom is being taken away by a Marxist regime that has been installed by the people of great wealth here in the United States, the same people who financed Marxism in Russia, the same people who financed Marxism and are financing the communist government in China today. And nobody ever asked, why are we supporting this ruthless, tyrannical regime? We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Dr. Cuddy has read from this Pravda article. You need to go to newswithviews.com. That's newswithviews.com. Read the lead article on the racist abortionist policies. But it starts off with this quotation from Pravda, where the people writing in Pravda, the communist regime, says, you know, the Americans there who have financed our Marxism here for all these years are now going into Marxism themselves. And, of course, the same people who financed Marxism in Russia are taking over control of the American government, and the people have no idea what's happening. They think they're free as step by step they're being taken into a Marxist system, which doesn't work. We know, we tried it here, it doesn't work. But isn't it interesting that we don't read about this in the United States? Oh, we hear all about what's going on over there in Iran, you know, and about the demonstrations in Iran. And a big to-do was made about the fact that Barack Obama had swatted a fly. He had actually been able to swat a fly during a television interview. I don't know how many of you saw it. I saw it about three times as he swatted that fly. That is what they emphasized our attention on, but the fact that the people writing in the communist publication in Moscow are saying, don't you understand, Marxism doesn't work, and America is adopting it, and the President Obama, who incidentally says, oh, I don't want to run the automotive industry, is running the automotive industry. He says, you know, he wants to protect the privacy of our medical records, and then he wants to put them up on the Internet. He says one thing, he does exactly the opposite, and everybody nods in assent. Well, where is the outcry from the Republican leaders? Why, it's deafening in its silence. The only person back there in Washington, D.C. who's really speaking out, of course, is Congressman Ron Paul. And I think Senator Robert Byrd, only thing he ever said I agreed with, he said he wrote a letter to President Obama saying you're destroying the Constitution. And he is. Go right ahead.
Sure. And remember, the power elite's goal is this world socialist government. And in terms of what we've just been talking about, that 1911 cartoon that I put in Secret Records Revealed and some other works, where Wall Street is greeting Marx, and the way Marx is portrayed as, you know, the communist manifesto and so on. But really, what's really going on is Marxist socialism. Because in that cartoon, early on, 1911, Robert Minor, is the cartoonist, and I include him in my article about Raymond Robbins and what really happened with the Soviet Revolution. He's one of those way prior to the revolution of 1917, Robert Minor, who's a communist-leaning American, sort of like Jack London. Jack London would go in the late 1800s, these communist rallies, yeah, hooray, hooray, you know, all that, hooray. Most people just say Jack London, oh, you know, Call of the Wild, White Fang, those books and all. But he's really sort of a communist rabble-rouser. So anyway, the 1911 cartoon has all of these people from Wall Street, Rockefeller, Morgan, and so forth. But also, remember, in that cartoon in 1911 is Roosevelt. Now remember, Teddy Roosevelt is very contemporary at the time. He's not a, quote, Wall Street banker, but he is a politician, and he's there. Teddy Roosevelt is there with Rockefeller, with Morgan, with Carnegie, saying, quote, delighted to see you. Karl Marx is standing there on the corner of Wall Street with these guys, and under his arm is not the Communist Manifesto. It's a book called Socialism. Socialism. And so fast forward to, say, the 1960s, and I put another quote in my books by Earl Browder, who's head of the American Communist Party at the time in the 60s, and he's talking, I think the quote's from the Pittsburgh Press Post-Gazette, something like that, and he's saying there's more real socialism even now in the U.S. than there is in the Soviet Union. And so you come on forward and you look at what Barack Obama's doing, and if anybody says, oh, look, he's a Marxist, immediately in people's brains, the average person is communist. Oh, Obama's a communist. But you got to remember what the play is here. That communism is a construct to play off against against capitalism, to have a synthesis of socialism. So as Obama moves us toward socialism, anybody that comes out and refers to him as some sort of Marxist, people automatically say, communist, well, golly, he can't be a communist, missing all the time that what's really going on is a movement toward socialism. It's like in the late 60s, where Business Roundtable International came up and bought, quote, bought up a few radicals with Exxon, Esso money at the time, now it's Exxon, Rockefeller money, to create a lot of radical commotion, so that as Wall Street moved to the left, they would not appear to move as far to the left because all these radicals would be doing their thing. So that when Rockefeller in 1973 writes this glowing article about Mao Zedong in the New York Times, it doesn't appear to be as radical as it would have otherwise. So that's why you have this communist construct to play off against when the real goal of Barack Obama and those people is movement toward socialism, which is what it was from the get-go, as represented in that 1911 cartoon, which was accurate.
Well,
that
I think
what really.
I think what's so important, and anybody would like to see it, I have a copy of the Communist of People's World 1963, where they laid out their plan, and everything was to centralize power in Washington, D.C. Everything was to establish federal laws on divorce and federal laws on labor and federal laws on education and federal laws on health. Everything was to be centralized under the power of people in Washington, D.C. Then, were the communists going to control that? Well, I'm sure they thought they were, but basically, of course, it was really to turn the power over to the people of great wealth, to the bankers and the corporations. But behind all of this were these powerful spiritual forces that energized these men, and that's what everybody's missed. Because why would any banker want communism and redistribution of wealth? Well, they're not going to redistribute their wealth. They're going to redistribute the wealth of the middle class and destroy the middle class, and they're moving towards a feudalistic society. They want a feudalist society. They want everybody to be serfs. They want to nationalize the automotive industry. They want to nationalize the steel industry. They want to nationalize healthcare. They want to nationalize industry. They want to nationalize everything. In fact, there was a recent article by one of the disciples I think his name is Roth Kunde something, not quite right, but he's a disciple of Henry Kissinger, pointing out that we have far more czars, you know, in Washington, D.C. today than the Romanovs had, you know, before the communists took over control of Russia in 1917. Everything is decentralized power, and where is the American leadership? Why aren't the people here demonstrating in the streets? Because they don't want them to. They're not financing the revolutions and demonstrations in the United States like they're financing them over there in Iran today as a distraction. And as we keep our attention focused on Iran, we're not seeing what's happened in America as we're losing our freedom. Go ahead.
Right, and I had mentioned a few minutes ago about Jack London. And most people know him for, you know, Call the Wild White thing and so on. And he's really, I have a speech from him at a big rally, I think it's in New York in the late 1800s, where he's, you know, supporting communism, communism, and so on. But anyway, the guy, because he was involved in this, really did know what was happening. And so a little-known book of his that I do quote in my Road to Socialism and the New World Order that Radio Liberty sells is 1907, The Iron Heel. Jack London wrote that, The Iron Heel. You know, it's a forerunner. It's a forerunner of Orwell's book and Brave New World and all that. This is The Iron Heel, 1907, same year as Robert Hugh Benson wrote Lord of the World, and that was about American socialism to come in 80 years or so. In other words, now, and he's saying this in 1907. Same thing with The Iron Heel. Jack London is saying that the model, the blueprint, that he calls them the oligarchs and plutocrats will use, is W.J. Gint's book, and that's our benevolent feudalism of about, I think it was 1901. He had a long article in a newspaper back then called The Independent, same time. Our benevolent feudalism. And what Gint is saying, and he was the editor of the American Fabian, which is socialist magazine, Gint is, and I also, in the previous column, I think I have printed a letter I have from H.G. Wells to Gint. He's sending a woman. Wells has said, I'm going to send this woman. She's interested in what we're up to, socialism. She's coming over to London, you know, treat her well and so forth and so on. But anyway, so Gint's book, Our Benevolent Feudalism, is the model that these people would use. And he goes through there point by point by point in terms of the industry and jobs and the labor and so on, because that is what they're trying to create, the old feudalistic society in terms of today, the old elite where you had the dukes and the earls, and then under them the serfs and the oafs and the knaves and the peasants and all that. And that's what they're trying to create today. And I call it a techno-feudalism because it's, you know, high-tech stuff is going to be able to monitor us and so on. So anyway, Jack London is spelling all that out in 1907 in The Iron Heel. Now, in terms of Barack Obama, he's the sort of model that they want today. He's the model in the sense of a lot of these people were very, very symbolic. My next column will be about the wonderful Wizard of Oz and the occultism, and that's L. Frank Baum and his Theosophists. But all those guys...
Basically, what you're pointing out is that The Wizard of Oz, this wonderful story, was basically a theosophical story with strong occult underpinnings, and everybody watches it, and they remember Judy Garland, and, you know, yeah. and the lion that didn't have any courage, and the, you know, the, but they don't understand. It was an allegory having to do with this wonderful totalitarian world that is coming.
Right, and so a lot of these people back then were the same sort of stuff. They would belong to, let's say, the Society of Psychical Research. The author of Alice in Wonderland and, you know, Lewis Carroll, they were the same thing. He was a member of the Society for Psychical Research, and the reason I'm mentioning that is they had a lot of symbolism, you know, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, and, for example, Humpty Dumpty. You know, who is Humpty Dumpty? He's sitting on this wall, and he thinks he's fine, but what is he really? He's an egg. He's very fragile. He's like us, right? And when he falls, when he gets off balance, you know, like the economy gets off balance and he falls, what happens? He shatters. And what's the final statement? And all the king's horses and all the king's men could not put Humpty Dumpty back together again. That's us. That's a we, correctly, grammar. But anyway, besides that, what you have in Obama is from something else. That's Alice in Wonderland. We've all gone down the rabbit hole. You know, that's where they've taken us. We're in Wonderland, which means the opposite of what things should be. That's why people who ordinarily would sing Happy Birthday to You, Happy Birthday, they don't. They sing a very merry unbirthday. You know, it's the opposite of reality. And so who is sitting there on the limb? The Cheshire Cat, right? All smile, but no substance. The cat's body comes and goes and comes and goes, right? No substance behind the smile. That's Barack Obama. All smile, all smile there. So anyway, concerning President Obama, as your listeners will remember, he recently delivered a commencement address at the University of Notre Dame, and there was this big protest regarding his position or that women should be able, let's be specific, violently to kill their babies in the womb. That's abortion. So there's this big controversy. Now, although Obama is an African-American, he apparently doesn't recognize, or perhaps doesn't care enough about, the racist element of abortion. And that is the primary subject of the News with Views column that I just posted this week. And so I give some background. A disproportionate number, for example, of America's abortions, about 2.5 times their numbers in population, are performed on blacks. I don't want to skew this. I don't want to, you know, be overreaching of this. So I'll say that almost, although most financial supporters of organizations favoring abortion rights are not racist, they're not most of the supporters. It is important, nevertheless, to note that former Planned Parenthood President Faye Waddleton, who's an African American herself, and also she was a 1986 Humanist of the Year. She said, and I have her on tape, this is January 1st, 1987, on CNN's Crossfire. She's on there with Robert Dornan, Congressman Dornan. She says, I got her on tape saying, quote, "We have received contributions from people who want to support us because they want all black women to stop having children," end quote. Now, she would go on and say, that's not the purpose of our group and so forth. But the point is, they accept this money. You know, if you, Dr. Stan, or I, or your listeners, accepted money from, say, the Klan or the Nazis, you know, there would be all heck to pay. The press would severely criticize any political candidate who admitted something like this. But here she is saying, yes, Planned Parenthood has received contributions from those types of people. And they don't send them back. You know, it's like, oh, look, he's a racist. Let's send the money back. No, they don't do that. They keep the money. So, from my perspective, it's a very sad statistic that also shows that a disproportionate number of the tax-funded abortions here are performed on poor blacks. And regarding that issue, when it's raised to certain people, even notable black liberals, like Dick Gregory, for example, when he was told of this, informed of that information, he called subsidies for abortion on demand nothing more than a calculated program of, quote, black genocide, end quote. So there are certain people within the black population who know exactly what's going on. There was, in my legislature here where I am, and probably, you know, just many, many legislators across the country. One of them told me, when I was asking about this issue of abortion and abortion funding, this legislator is pro-life. He questioned whether some of his colleagues had a racist attitude of, the way he put it was, quote, getting rid of those black welfare babies before they get here, end quote. And, you know, you would hear that sort of thing. Yeah, that's why we're going to fund it, to get rid of them, like that. And responding to that type of thing, there was a woman named Irma, E-R-M-A, Craven. She's an African-American, is former chairwoman of Minneapolis' Commission on Human Relations. And she said, responding to this, quote, "Now the womb of the black woman is seen as the latest battleground for oppression. Now that power is near, the, quote, masters, quote, want us to call a moratorium on having babies. When looked at in context, the whole mess adds up to blatant genocide," end quote. Now, that's a quote, just like Dick Gregory, black genocide. She also is saying she's very suspicious of what's going on with this abortion funding. Like, it's a very sneaky program of genocide. It's like Margaret Sanger with her quote, what she called her Negro Project. She went out and got some black ministers and said, you know, we got to hire these black ministers to go out and calm the black population so they won't think that what we're up to is trying to wipe out their population. But Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood herself, called these people, you know, blacks, Catholics, Jews, gypsies, she called them dysgenic stocks. You know, we need to sort of get rid of them, as many as possible. And so this was their attitude. This was a racist and elitist attitude they had. So anyway, a number of blacks do see what's going on. And so the next question I ask is, how is this racism facilitated? I think I hear the music.
You do hear the music, but of course it's being facilitated through American taxpayers' dollars. And the American taxpayers provide, you know, literally hundreds of millions of dollars to Planned Parenthood every year. And where is the outcry from our conservative Christian brethren and from our conservative Christian churches? We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program. Well, Dennis, you have 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, and I want to point out, when you were saying we fund this, we not only fund it here. I mean, there's International Planned Parenthood, and we put a lot of money into the Agency for International Development and various population control measures, and there's also that NSSM 200 that Kissinger authored around 1972 or 73, saying they would use food in order to control populations. You know, you go along with what we want, and we'll give you the aid, the loans, or whatever, write out aid. And so it's not just here, but population control, whether it's Asians or whatever, it's an assault on poor people most often. And it's not just against blacks, it's against Asians and lots of others. So anyway, this particular article is focusing on African Americans. And so I say, how is this racism facilitated? It's not just the funding of abortions, but many poor blacks are intimidated into having abortions. And this is a quote from a Dr. Charles Greenlee. He's I don't know if he's still alive. He may not be. But he has a whole family involved, I think. But he's Dr. Charles Greenlee, and he's was in Pittsburgh, a Pittsburgh physician, black physician. And he said that, quote, "The intimidation takes the form of implicit and explicit threats that welfare payments will be cut off if the recipient has more children," end quote. So it's not just, here's some money, you know, go have an abortion. It's an intimidation, sometimes implicit. A black person comes in, they're on welfare. Well, you know, we may cut this off unless you decide to abort that child you're carrying in your womb. So there's that element as well. And so, responding to that, what I point out is that before racist whites continue to promote abortions for poor black women, perhaps they will reflect upon the experience of renowned black actress and gospel singer Ethel Waters. And maybe I think time's running out. Maybe we should pick up on that next time.
All right, we will pick that up next time. Our guest, of course, has been Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And you can, of course, listen to his programs here every Friday afternoon. But, of course, you want to read this essay. It's at newswithviews.com. That's newswithviews.com. It's the latest article that's posted there, and it deals with give me the exact title.
Well, it's the racism and anti-liberalism of abortion.
Racism and anti-liberalism of abortion. Dennis, God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Cuddy. I certainly always enjoy what he has to say. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and certainly we were talking about with Dr. Cuddy, at least during the early part of the program, about the fact that the American capitalist financed communism in Russia. That's very difficult for people to believe, any more than the average American can believe that American corporations financed Adolf Hitler. Well, we carry a number of books on this subject. The first one is Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution by Professor Sutton. The second is Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler by Professor Sutton. And the third is Wall Street and FDR by Professor Sutton. They're all available from Radio Liberty. They're must reading for anybody who wants to understand what's going on, because nothing is as it appears to be. We have a little pamphlet we put together based upon a series of my talks. It's called The Communist Capitalist Alliance. It's really based upon a speech that was given by Alexander Solzhenitsyn to the AFL-CIO union meeting, totally blacked out by the media, but we found it in the congressional record. But this pamphlet, The Communist Capitalist Alliance, will give you an overview. Now, why would our leaders, of course, been financing communism in Russia and financing communism in China? It's 20 years since the Tiananmen Square of horror, when they, of course, were simply mowing down people there in the Tiananmen Square with gunfire. The communist Chinese were doing it. What did the United States do in retaliation for that? Why we gave communist China the most favored nation treaty status? They could now begin to bring their products into the United States without any tariffs. That was George Herbert Walker Bush who did that. We were not anti-communist. We weren't against what went on in Tiananmen Square. Everybody was horrified, and we punished the Chinese communists by giving them most favored nation treaty status. You can check these things out on the Internet. You need to get the information. Nothing is as it appears to be. Our leaders have been financing communism since its inception, and now, of course, we're in the final stages. We consolidate the world, and this is why you, of course, need to hear my talk on the forbidden, find me on the financial Armageddon, because we simply quote from Henry Kissinger, who's one of the major architects of what's going on today, been working for the Rockefeller family for half a century, and the Rockefellers are financing this whole movement towards the one world government. That's the Financial Armageddon. It's an excellent DVD, PowerPoint presentation. And then, of course, there's a syllabus that goes with that. You need to have this information. You need to help us get it out. We have another DVD we've only recently been able to make available. It's Patrick Wood's talk on the Trilateral Commission. It's the talk he gave here last October, but of course we encourage you to get it. It's really the Trilateral Commission and how the Trilateral Commission is responsible for creating the current financial collapse. This didn't happen just by accident. It wasn't a matter of mistake. It wasn't a matter of not enough regulation. It wasn't a matter of greed. It was done intentionally. There were plenty of regulations. The Bush administration wouldn't let them be enforced. And when Elliot Spitzer tried to bring out the truth, why, of course, immediately the FBI leaked a story about his affair with a prostitute. Why? To distract attention from what Elliot Spitzer was saying. Look, the attorney generals all across the country were aware of the fact that the economy was going to collapse, tried to do something about it, and the Bush administration wouldn't let them. Now, this was in February of 2008. We still could have done something at the time. They couldn't let the American people know the truth, so they had to create a diversion. and our attention was on, oh, that terrible Elliot Spitzer. He had an affair with an expensive prostitute, and certainly I'm not justifying it. I'm saying, did you ever ask why the FBI was investigating Elliot Spitzer's personal affairs, why they leaked the story? It was simply a diversion, like what's going on over in Iran today. Understand how they create our ideas, how they form our tastes, how they create our reality, and the experts at it. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Go there, you can listen to our programs. Certainly, 9 hours a day on the satellite feed, 4 hours a day live. But please pray for America, for